This is the Thanks for Sharing podcast, the podcast where we explore all things recovery, healing, and relationship.
Remember to subscribe and download episodes in the iTunes Store, the Google Play Store, or on the Podbean app.
You can find more Thanks for Sharing at www.thanksforsharingpodcast.com or on Facebook at facebook.com/healingpaths. That's path with an S.
Hello and welcome to the Thanks for Sharing podcast. I'm John T.
And I'm Jackie P.
We are back. I think this is episode 34.
Yes.
Something like that. So I just have to say, I'm astounded that we've come this far.
I know.
That we've made it this far.
Well, I was thinking the other day, I'm like, 30, we're going to be doing 34. That's not that many. But then I was like, wait, that's like half a year. There's only 52 weeks in a year.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, now 34 sounds like more.
Yeah. So I'm shocked that we've found this much stuff to talk about and that there's still more to talk about.
Right.
So
on a pretty regular basis, things pop into my head and I think, oh, we should do a podcast on that. So there's still a lot rattling up around there.
Yeah, tune in. The miracle is going to keep happening. So we are continuing our series on the steps, and it's step four today. Did you have a preference for where we start on step four?
Nope, but I see that you have the gentle path through the 12 steps.
Yeah, I liked, I think this is more, it's less of the philosophical approach and more of the part that I want to share from this book. It's more of the practical approach to the fourth step.
Okay.
Which I would say, I think it's really important to understand the practical approach to this because it is a very overwhelming step.
Uh-huh.
Like, I think this is where people work steps one through three all the time.
Yeah.
They get to step four and it's like, maybe I need to go back to step one.
Uh-huh.
It's a really hard one to bite into. So this is on page 173 of A Gentle Path Through the 12 Steps. And by the way, the fourth step is we made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. So here on page 173, it says, With the first step, you admitted your powerlessness and vulnerability. The second and third steps helped you to gain the support you need from your higher power and other people to face the reality of addiction and co-addiction in your life. With that support, you can make a fearless moral inventory and use it to examine the damage your illness has caused. This thorough self-assessment will impel you to let go of much of what keeps you in your compulsive patterns. Recovery requires giving up old ways in which you nurtured yourself by living in the extremes. In that sense, the fourth and fifth steps are a grieving process. The feelings that go into the grieving process in the fourth and fifth steps include discomfort, anger, fear, shame, sadness, and loneliness. So all of our favorite emotions we get to face here. Discomfort is the outer layer of these feelings. Anger is the second layer, and so on down to the innermost feeling of loneliness. These feelings, which are the layers of your internal self, serve as a barometer of how you feel about your behavior. They can also be a structure on which you build your moral inventory. You will find the fourth step inventory to be a deeply personal experience with each layer guiding you to a deeper relationship with yourself. Notice, however, that the innermost layer is loneliness, in which you confront the existential reality of your aloneness and estrangement. However, the program in its wisdom asks you in the fifth step to find and share with another person the work you have done on your fourth step. You do not need to do this alone. The program builds in more support for you at each difficult turn in your path. Before starting your fourth step, set a time with the person who will hear your fifth step. There are several reasons for doing this. First, the fourth step is an awesome task and easy to put off. By making an appointment, you make a commitment to get the task done. Even if you have to reset the appointment, the focus will be on getting the step done. I wanted to share that in my 12-step group, there was a knot of us who were kind of doing a big fourth step. We were working on it all about the same time. And they're like, it was months and months coming back. I'm still working on my fourth step. And some weeks it was, I've done nothing with my fourth step because I'm overwhelmed. And every single person in that knot came to a point where it was like, okay, we're going to schedule the time to give the fourth step and I'm going to wrap it up. And it felt like the energy really changed from like, I'm slogging through this and it feels bad, to I'm working through this because there's a story here that I need to share.
Oh.
And it's like the emotion went from this feels really bad to now this is liberating.
Yeah.
Everything I'm writing here, everything I'm working on here, this is me unburdening.
Yeah.
This is me taking off this character defect or this injury I've caused somebody else, or picking up and taking on this positive attribute about myself.
Well, and I like that in the that book that you just read from, I like that it really hits on loneliness and talks about how mm-hmm. that's really at the core and reminds us. It was when I was reading that book that I had this like aha moment where I was like, how brilliant is that to say, schedule your fifth step right away?
Mm-hmm.
Because we can feel very lonely and pretty down on ourselves when we're doing the fourth step. And so, you know, I like that idea of doing a fourth, fifth step combo.
Yeah.
That once you finish that fourth step, it's really important to be sharing that, mm-hmm. even though that sounds horrifying, to share that with another person who is walking the journey and can hold that with us and mm-hmm. say, me too.
Mm-hmm.
I have a very similar story, so that we don't feel alone and in our shame. That was kind of that aha moment. Like, oh, yeah. I really like doing that fourth, fifth in a combination mm-hmm. package.
And I feel like it's after the fifth step that we, like, recovery is less about this bumping around in a dark cave mm-hmm. and we start living in the open with mm-hmm. light.
Yeah.
And life really changes after you yes. share that fifth step.
It is really liberating, as you were saying.
Yeah.
Which on the other side of the fourth step, when we're looking at doing it, doesn't, like, liberating is not a word we would use to describe
no.
it.
No.
So going along with the gentle path through the 12 steps, I have the gentle path through the 12 principles. And principle 4 that goes along with step 4 is responsibility. And the question is, who am I? So it says here on page 77, there can be no recovery without responsibility. When we were caught in the web of addiction, we used our emotions to protect us from reality. We guarded our delusions with anger. We masked our pain with fear. We obscured our difficult choices with shame. We blurred our sense of self with sorrow. It's as if we threw a blanket over our life, keeping it dark and confined. When we practiced our addiction, we used our pain to try to shed personal responsibility. We told ourselves that we weren't responsible for our behavior because we'd been abused or abandoned or cheated or because our life sucked. In recovery, however, we stopped hiding from ourselves. We understand the importance of examining our life, and we accept responsibility for everything in it. We realize that a deeply painful past does not let us off the hook. Nothing lets us off the hook. We are always responsible for what we do and decide. Early in recovery, we discovered that reality was often quite different from our ideas about it. We thought we were in control of our life. We believed we were capable of managing our illness on our own. We imagined that other people were to blame for our situation. We chose delusional and magical thinking over the reality of here and now. Thankfully, those days are behind us. We have made an ongoing commitment to recovery. We accept that reality is irrevocable, that it is irreconcilable with addiction, and that recovery is often inconvenient because it demands the best from us.
I really like the notion of responsibility when it comes to recovery from addiction, because for a lot of the folks that I work with, it shifts from this bad word uh-huh. that our parents or our family would put on us. Take responsibility meant clean up 100% of this mess.
Right.
To responsibility means I'm going to own what's mine,
uh-huh.
and I'm not going to own what's not mine.
Right.
Which
are, as we've done in previous episodes, functional traits of
yep.
a mature functional adult.
Yeah, yeah. This next section, this comes from the 12 Steps and 12 Traditions, and this is on page 49. So before this, it talks about all of the feelings around the fourth step and the feelings that we're going to get into in the fourth step. And I think that's one of the things that makes the fourth step so hard, is it probably brings up the most emotion and the most difficult mm-hmm. emotions. It says, all these failings generate fear, a soul sickness in its own right. Then fear in turn generates more character defects, unreasonable fear that our instincts will not be satisfied, drives us to covert possessions of others, to lust for sex and power, to become angry when our instinctive demands are threatened, to be envious when the ambitions of others seem to be realized while ours are not. We eat, drink, and grab for more of everything than we need, fearing we shall never have enough. And with genuine alarm at the prospect of work, we stay lazy. We loaf and procrastinate, or at best work grudgingly under half steam. These fears are the termites that ceaselessly devour the foundations of whatever sort of life we try to build. So when AA suggests a fearless moral inventory, it must seem to every newcomer that more is being asked of him than he can do. Both pride and his fear beat him back every time he tries to look within himself. Pride says, you need not pass this way. Fear says, you dare not look. Mm. But the testimony of AAs who have really tried a moral inventory is the pride and fear of this sort turn out to be the boogeyman and nothing else. Once we have a complete willingness to take our inventory and exert ourselves to do the job thoroughly, a wonderful light falls upon this foggy scene. As we persist, a brand new kind of confidence is born, and the sense of relief at finally facing ourselves is indescribable. These are the first fruits of step four.
Mm. I like that. One of my favorite, this kind of goes along with that, one of my favorite paragraphs in the AA Big Book is on page 52. Where, I mean, just thinking about, you know, once you've finished working the 12 steps on your addiction, 52, middle of the page, it says, we were having trouble with personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional natures. We were a prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. Was not a basic solution of these bedevilments more important than whether we should see new reels of lunar light? Of course it was. I love that because all of those, I mean, those are great things to work step four on or to really work all of the steps and mm-hmm. kind of look at. That's one of my favorite paragraphs, that, you know, to look at and see that we could work the steps simply around our fears.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who doesn't have problems with personal relationships?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes can't control our emotional natures. You know, we read that and we're like, oh, wow, they've been reading my journal.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's important to note here, like, at some point, I think it's important to work a comprehensive fourth step.
Mm-hmm.
But the fourth step is not this event that we complete and then we never go back to. It's a skill.
Mm-hmm.
So again, that breaking it up. Let me look at my fears. Yeah. Let me look at my relationships. Let me look at my resentments. I think breaking it up in that spirit of I'm going to look at this totally and completely and honestly. And then I don't think a four step is a four step without a fifth step
right.
following it. And yep. then following that up with sharing it with somebody.
Yep. Yeah. So speaking of the AA Big Book, on page 64, it says, therefore, we started upon a personal inventory. This was step four. A business which takes no regular inventory usually goes broke. Taking a commercial inventory is a fact-finding and a fact-facing process. It is an effort to discover the truth about the stock in trade. One object is to disclose damaged or unsaleable goods, to get rid of them promptly and without regret. We did exactly the same thing with our lives. We took stock honestly. First, we searched out the flaws in our makeup which caused our failure. Being convinced that self, manifested in various ways, was what had defeated us, we considered its common manifestations. Resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more addicts than anything else. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. We listed people, institutions, or principles with whom we were angry. This is jumping over to page 68. We reviewed our fears thoroughly. We put them on paper, even though we had no resentment in connection with them. We asked ourselves why we had them. Wasn't it because self-reliance failed us? Self-reliance was good as far as it went, but it didn't go far enough. And then on 69... we reviewed our own conduct over the years past. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? Whom had we hurt? Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Were we at fault? What should we have done instead? We got this all down on paper and looked at it. We must be willing to make amends where we have done harm, provided that we do not bring about still more harm in doing so. And then, you know, there's some good reading on page 69 and 70. that get into, I've had alcoholic clients before who don't realize that the Big Book actually hits on sexual behaviors.
Well, it's all over the
place. It is
in
all
the Big
over,
Book.
Yes. So there's some good reading in these pages 64 through 70 if you want to get into that. But then on page 70 says, if we have been thorough, this is towards the bottom of the page, if we've been thorough about our personal inventory, we have written down a lot. We have listed and analyzed our resentments. We have begun to comprehend their futility and their fatality. We have commenced to see their terrible destructiveness. We have begun to learn tolerance, patience, and goodwill toward all men, even our enemies, for we look on them as sick people. We have listed the people we have hurt by our conduct and are willing to straighten out the past if we can.
I want to call attention to a word that came up about six times in what you read. Mm-hmm. It said write, written mm-hmm. down, made a list. And there's something in the SAA big book that I want to read about that. But first share a story. I think that writing down the inventory is really daunting.
Uh-huh.
And I had a client a few years ago who started going to a 12-step group, and he got there and he went 1 week, and I think he came back to a session and he said, well, good news. I've already done like a third of the program. And I said, really? Like, what does that mean? You've already done it? And he's like, well, I know that I'm in trouble, and I'm a religious person, and I believe in God, and I know I have problems. And I said,
Great.
What are those problems? I have to list them. And I said, well, I think it's really hard to fix something or ask God to fix something that you don't know what it is.
Uh-huh.
Like, I think one of the key phrases in the big book and in 12-step fellowships is we surrender, which means we had something that we mm-hmm. give up. And I said, if you can't list out what's happening mm-hmm. for you, I don't think you can give it up. And he said, well, do you want me to list it now? And I said, no, I want you to think about it, and I want you to write it down, and I want you to make this comprehensive. I don't think he came back to therapy for like a year and a half.
Oh,
after that.
Yeah. Some people hit that fourth step and it mm-hmm. stops them in their tracks.
Yeah.
I was meeting with a client earlier this week, and I gave him some feedback and said, you know, I think when you're here in sessions, when you've been in group, like you feel it and you have awareness of it, and then it floats right on past mm-hmm. you and it's gone. And he said, yeah, I think I need to create a space for that to go into. And I use the word, I said, yeah, I think you need like not a real container, but like a figurative container inside mm-hmm. of you in which you have access.
Yeah.
Because once it's gone, you forget it, and we keep kind of feeling the same thing, and then it's gone, and we feel it again, and it's gone. And so you need a place to contain it. And he was like, I would remember it. And I said, yeah. And he was like, oh, I was thinking I need a space to put it so I can forget about it.
Well, and that's, I think that's the cycle of shame when we don't mm-hmm. write down the inventory, right? We feel it for a moment and then we put it out of yeah. our mind.
And that's what I told him. I said, once we've worked through it and we're resolving it and it goes in this container that we have access to,
mm-hmm.
it actually helps us.
Yeah.
So he's going to think about that for a week.
Yeah. So I'm going to read this from page 32 of the Sex Addicts Anonymous big book. It says, the four-step inventory is a written inventory. If we merely say it out loud or think about it, it's too easy to miss or ignore important things. All inventories have to be recorded in some way in order to be accurate. Imagine trying to take inventory of all the merchandise in a store without writing anything down. In the same way, our inventory needs to be documented in order to be useful. The written inventory serves as a snapshot of the current state of our moral beings and allows us to get an accurate, realistic perspective on ourselves, perhaps for the very first time. We may also draw on this inventory for reference when working steps 5 through 9. I think that's important to note too. Step 4, I'd say, is one of those bottleneck steps.
Uh-huh.
Doing step 4 thoroughly and properly and completely sets you up to do really good work on the steps that follow after. I'm jumping over to page 34. It says, we also inventory our resentments. For sex addicts, resentment is one of the most stubborn obstacles of our spiritual growth. And I want to read this part because the relationship between resentment and acting out is huge.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's missed, I don't think that sobriety comes
right
easily. Resentment means holding on to our old hurts, anger, and grudges. When we cling to our hurts and our anger, we get a negative attitude. We feel victimized. And each time we play the event over in our minds, we feel victimized again. From this victim attitude, we often slip into an attitude of entitlement. If life is unfair, then we are entitled to get what we need and to do it by any means necessary. So feeling entitled, we play by a different set of rules. We lower our moral standards and allow ourselves to get our fair share. We use dishonesty, blaming others, manipulation, and theft to even the score. I think recognizing that cycle of resentment, victimization, and entitlement,
uh-huh.
I think that is some really hard work in step 4, because that's certainly for most of the people that I work with and most of the people that I've seen work a four-step, those are the parts of themselves that they would like to wholesale ignore.
Right.
And not admit that that happens and that it happens easily.
Uh-huh.
But I think it's really important to really put a magnifying glass on that process if you want sobriety.
I'm going to read a couple of paragraphs from SAA Green Book as well. It says on page 33, while in our first step, we examine the patterns of our sexual behavior or addiction and disclose specific instances, here we explore more deeply our sexual history and look at every instance in which our sexual behavior directly or indirectly harmed others or ourselves. We look at whom we hurt, what we did specifically to hurt them, and why we did it. In the process, we may uncover the secret agendas, fantasies, beliefs, and rationalizations contributing to our behavior. While violating others sexually is an obvious example of harm done, we also acknowledge that using people for our sexual exploits, violating trust, committing infidelity, lying and covering up our behaviors, manipulating others covertly or overtly, and taking advantage of others by using power or authority are other ways we may have caused harm. We may also examine our traumatic sexual experiences or sexually abusive relationships and their effects on ourselves and others. Clarity, honesty, and self-disclosure are essential as we explore each instance. We take full and unequivocal responsibility for what we've done, even if we were co-partners in sexual misdeeds. In working step four, we focus only on our part. That's some powerful stuff there.
Yeah, I really like the part about our misdeeds, our problems.
Secret agendas.
Yeah, yeah. That it reveals the secret agenda. I think there's a really important question to ask in recovery that gets at the emotions that underlie the addiction, and that's why would I do that?
Mm-hmm.
And we can't ask why would I do that until we know what we've done.
Right.
And until we can see and talk about completely what we've done. But then that's really, I think the fourth step is really the jumping off point for understanding the deeper hurts.
Yes.
I'm amazed at when I look at four steps or, you know, see a timeline of a client's sexual acting out, how clear the themes are.
Mm-hmm.
When those people are in it, I don't think they see it as thematic. But when you write it down, you start to see very clear themes, and that really helps you to get at the underlying wounds.
Yeah. And then on page 35 of the Green Book, it says, our emotions have often been a source of pain and confusion in our lives, and they frequently triggered our addictive sexual behavior. We may have acted out whenever we experienced anger, fear, anxiety, or even joy, rather than responding to these emotions in a healthy way. We also may notice that our feelings increase in intensity when we stop acting out. Who hasn't noticed that?
I like to say when you stop doing something, you find out really quickly why you did it in the first place.
In taking inventory, we may write about the many ways that these feelings have ruled our lives, using specific examples from our experience. We strive to isolate and recognize each feeling to the best of our ability, and we practice acceptance of all our emotions, rather than denying or fearing them. In each case, we search for the defects of character revealed by our emotional unmanageability, as well as giving ourselves credit for the times we were responsible, caring, and appropriate with our emotional responses. If we find ourselves hesitating, we turn to our higher power for help, trusting that with God's care, we cannot fail. I like that, again, just because we will bump into that loneliness, and it'll slow us down in our process. And so, like you were saying in your story with your 12-step group, you know, the higher power, this one says turning to our higher power. And as we've read in other steps, sometimes that higher power is the group.
Mm-hmm.
And turning to the group, and maybe they're all working it together or talking about being stuck and the group being able to say, yeah, me too, and shifting that energy from one of fear into liberation.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to read next from the Recovering Couples Anonymous book. And as with all other steps, it's very brief. I thought there's a list of questions here, and I wanted to read some of these questions that they ask you to look at as a couple.
Mm.
So it says, looking at unfinished business, in what ways have I failed to raise issues with my partner, letting those unresolved issues build resentments?
There's that word again.
Resentments. In what ways, this is about self-responsibility, in what ways have I failed to take responsibility for my actions? Accuracy and honesty, in what ways have I placated my partner, avoided sharing my own perceptions? Stress, in what ways has my overextension and stress affected my partner? Separateness, in what ways have I developed a separate life from my partner? Shaming and blaming, in what ways have I sought to shame and blame my partner? Pain thresholds, in what ways have I tolerated emotional pain that was unnecessary and caused distance from my partner? That one's a really interesting one.
Yeah.
And the reason why they have you look at these questions is near the end of their description of step four. It says, having gained a better understanding in step four of how frequently our problems arose from within us rather than as a result of our external hostile forces, many of us found it very freeing to reveal our problems to another couple, often our sponsor couple. For me, that's the heart of step four, and that responsibility thing is we get a very clear picture of, and I think in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it talks about how our misery is of our own making. I think for so much of our life before recovery, we've deflected responsibility. I'm this way because if my parents hadn't, then I would, or you know, abuse caused me to, which all of those are contributing factors.
Right.
But as a
but it doesn't let us off the hook.
Yeah. Well, as a functional adult, you realize that your behavior is your behavior, no matter the reason why you did it.
Yeah.
And so I think those questions and that idea of focusing on what's going on with me that causes problems is part of what's freeing in step four.
Yeah.
And that's part of how I think we continue to live step four, which I think it's step 10 as we continue to take inventory. Right. And when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. I think that's the power that comes in working step four consistently is there's not really external forces that bog us down.
Well, and it doesn't get so backlogged
like
it did the first time we take step four because we're continuing to take our inventory daily.
Yeah.
In the SA White Book, there's some warnings here. On page 97, it says, sadly, many men and women with years of physical sobriety on 12-step programs never make the breakthrough into the heart of the program and true recovery. The biggest obstacle seems to be steps 4 through 10, the core substance of the program. It is these steps that seem to be the least realized in actual experience. When first exposed to these steps, many of us balk. The process of righting wrongs is foreign to us. It seems light years away in another dimension. We can't connect with it. We either dismiss it out of hand or say to ourselves, I'm doing fine just like I am. Blindness and denial. It is as though we will go to any lengths to avoid doing what is required for our own healing. When some members see that such persons are captive to externals, rather than having an awakening to life, they have been overheard to say, if sobriety is all there is, I want no part of it. There are few things so pitiful as an aborted spiritual life. The amazing thing is that we can give the appearance of life even though we are dead.
Hmm.
I think that's a powerful warning just in talking about, as we've mentioned, the power in step four, and really that opens us up for the spiritual awakening, for the transformation, for a living a life that we didn't know before step four.
And you're really getting behind that mask. I would say a good portion of the addicts that I work with are very charming and you'd say very lively people, but there's not a whole lot going on behind that.
The appearance of life, even though they're dead. I thought that was a powerful sentence.
Yeah, definitely.
In Al-Anon, talks about step four, and it says, let's see. So it says, step four, this is on page 51. Step four is an inventory, a list of characteristics, thoughts and behavior patterns, relationships and events that make us who we are today. We wouldn't hesitate to take inventory if we owned a toy store. It would be essential to know that we had too many dolls, not enough Frisbees, or just the right number of board games. Such information would allow us to make adjustments and bring our business into balance. So again, a good analogy that kind of takes the emotional shame piece out of it. Says, it is often suggested that we begin our inventory by concentrating exclusively on our character assets, our positive traits. Most of us are accustomed to finding fault with ourselves, and we overlook or negate the fact that we really are terrific, caring people at heart. That's why it is imperative to take the time to search out and identify all that is commendable about ourselves. By acknowledging our strengths, we can use them as the basis for the new life we are creating for ourselves. And once we have acknowledged our positive attributes, laudable characteristics, and special talents, we can better maintain some objectivity as we delve into the not-so-desirable areas of our behavior and attitudes. Steps 1, 2, and 3 lay the groundwork for this step. Without the spiritual basis formed in the first three steps, a searching moral inventory can quickly become a weapon of self-abuse. If we are not ready to use this step fearlessly, we may still be confused about the purpose of taking inventory and probably have unfinished business with the previous three steps.
I would note here that I think all the big books that I've read have talked about the positive side mm-hmm. of the four-step inventory. And I'm glad that you read that because I don't think it gets enough credit in the process. Yeah. I think that's just as difficult for people in recovery to do as it is to look at the faults. And it's really important to understand that we're not coming to the table without any skill or without any assets or without any abilities that are going to help us do this work. Mm-hmm. And that's a really critical part of knowing our whole self, is that we're not just the pile of garbage we feel like we are, and we're not the hero in glittering armor that we want to be.
Right.
We are a mixture of the two.
Yep. Unfortunately, but fortunately, right?
Right.
And then in Essanon, page 39, says, step 4 is an action step. We do something concrete to continue our process of personal growth by looking at ourselves truthfully. We begin by examining our own character defects. This process is not so much self-analysis as it is self-examination. It is a relaxed, objective look at what's really there. So I thought that was interesting. It's a relaxed.
Well, and that it's not analysis. It's just examination. It's just gathering the facts.
Let's see. It leads to self-understanding, which can help us to make great changes in our thoughts and behavior. When we search through our own moral issues, we can look deep into attitudes, motives, and secrets, and secret thoughts we hide so well. As we explored the sources of our problems, the deep roots of our misery became more apparent. We discovered that we were the source of much of the pain for which we had blamed others. We examined our attitudes and behavior in a thorough way for the first time and began to see that the sexaholic wasn't the only one causing problems in the relationship. We were willing to search out, spend some time, and be thorough with ourselves. Says this on page 40. We do not want to judge ourselves by our own standards. Neither do we want to compare ourselves with others and make excuses like everyone does that. We do want to examine ourselves in the light we have been given by God as we understand Him and by the principles of our program. Then it says, some common symptoms of our emotional insecurity are worry, anger, self-pity, and depression. I don't think we've had worry yet come up. We are still ultimately responsible for the way we respond to others, even if it seems that others cause these emotions inside us. To take an accurate inventory, it helps to take into consideration all the relationships that have caused recurring conflicts. We may ask ourselves questions similar to these. Looking into the past and present, what sexual or relationship-ish situations have caused me anxiety, bitterness, or pain? Looking at each situation fairly, can I see where I have been at least partially responsible due to either my reaction or my participation? If I am disturbed by the behaviors of others, why do I lack the ability to detach with compassion? Answering these kinds of questions can disclose the source of our discomfort.
Again, the questions come out there. I think good questions can be disarming in that they take us away from defensiveness and protection and into just this curious place. Right. I want to know the story.
Yep.
As you were reading that, I was noticing, I think in the last three episodes, we've saved ACA for last.
Yeah, well.
It's good.
It's really good.
I do want to point out there in the essay book where it's talking about we don't make analysis, we don't make judgment of it. In the ACA book, it talks about how when we share our four-step with our sponsor or with our fellow traveler, their job is to help us identify the themes, and their job is to help us to do some of the analysis. And as I've witnessed fourth and fifth steps in ACA, that's a very caring process. Yes. That I sat with you in that, and I felt your pain as we went through that. And now, very lovingly and very gently, I'm going to help you see the character defects that you may want to work on and that you may want to ask your higher power for help on.
Well, and I think it's the fourth and then the fifth step actually is a joining. And for many of us, it's the first time we've been able to let somebody actually join us where we are, who we are, how we are. Like, they really join us there.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not up to us. It's not just up to us to make the evaluation of whether we're good or bad. And it's not up to our sponsor either.
Right.
Or maybe even God's not deciding whether we're good or bad.
Right.
It's just that as I show myself to you, the people who care for me are going to help me to care for that. So I'm on page 153 of the big red book of Adult Children of Alcoholics. And this is just the very first part of step four. It says, in approaching step four, many adult children have said, why dredge up the past? What's done is done. I'm forgetting the past and moving forward. I think that's one of the most common sentiments I hear when I'm meeting with a new client. I don't look back there. I always look up here.
Yeah.
And that's where...
What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
Right. No, what happens with Vegas actually followed you home.
Right.
It's causing problems. For these statements, ACA has an answer and a guarantee. Most people don't arrive at ACA door by mistake. You are here for a reason, so keep an open mind. Our experience tells us that our past can be our greatest asset if we are willing to ask for help and to do the work to find out what happened. Even the adult children who can recount abuse or incidents of rejection without working a single step can benefit from step four. Simply recounting the past is not always enough to bring about the healing and self-forgiveness. Without knowing the meaning of the abandonment encoded in the past, the adult child is doomed to repeat it. Anastasia talked about that in our trauma episode, that perhaps the biggest impact of trauma isn't what happened to our bodies, but the beliefs we took on board about ourselves.
Well, in that word, without knowing the meaning of the abandonment encoded, you know, encoding is this ability to kind of know the beginning, the middle, and the end of the story, so we have all of the pieces and we can talk about it. And I think most importantly, we can recognize the impact on us. We can start to draw things like, you know, I mean, maybe with something trauma, we're saying it changed me, but I also learned that I was resilient.
Yeah.
I mean, that's encoding, right? We've got the whole story, not just telling the story, but really understanding the impact and being able to make some meaning of it.
And there's a big focus in ACA of when we understand the impact and make meaning of it, we don't pass it on to the next generation
because,
like it was passed
on to us. And that's what it says here. Without knowing that, the adult child is doomed.
Yeah.
Without having that that encoded, we're doomed.
Yeah. And it's interesting as you read ACA, and the ACA big book says if you have another addiction that you're not sober in or other things, like, work those fellowships first and then come to ACA, because I think ACA gets so focused on the relationships and where those relationships come from and why they feel the way that they do. And I know for me as an ACA, this is a big focus of my recovery, is I don't want to mindlessly pass on much.
Yeah. Well, and if we're not sober in the other addictions and we start working ACA, then we're more likely to feel like we can blame others for our addictions, right? We haven't really taken our inventory, and so we're really not ready to work in ACA.
Yeah, yeah, because that is a part of the ACA four-step. I don't know that I'll read this verbatim, but it talks about our inventory being blameless. And the original Tony A. 12 Steps said that we took a blameless inventory of our families.
Yes.
The official 12 steps of ACA now talk about a personal inventory, but it's still talked about in this book about how important it is that we take inventory of the family, and that that inventory is searching and blameless, because in essence, we take that searching and blameless inventory of our parents because in essence, we'd become them.
Yeah.
I think it's really hard to understand who you are without understanding the context of your family. We need to get him on the podcast. Just this week, we had a local therapist come and teach us how to use genograms in working with families. And one of the things that he talked about there was understanding the family story puts people in a context to work on their own recovery.
Yeah. I'm looking on page 157. Let me see. Some of that we just kind of covered. We didn't read it, but we covered it. Oh, I liked this part on 158 where it says, this is talking, like taking on that blameless, taking the blameless inventory of our family and our parents particularly. So it says, some of these well-meaning parents learn to say, let me back up. Okay, it says, we avoid blame because we are aware of the generational nature of family dysfunction. Our parents passed on the seeds of shame and fear given to them. They were once children without a choice. They survived as we survived. While some parents were obviously sadistic or unrepentant, others did the best they could. These parents made a conscious decision to raise their children differently than they were raised. Many of these parents abstained from alcohol, yet passed on problematic fear and shame just the same. Some of these well-meaning parents learned to say affirming statements of love and encouragement, yet they still transferred their own self-doubt and lack of self-love in large measures. Many of us are the adult children of these parents. We have acted out with addiction or another self-harming behavior, continuing the disease of family dysfunction. And then somewhere it talks about, on the next page, 159, says many of us working step four realize we have harmed our own children. Mm. We have passed on what was done to us. Many of us have changed our behavior and made amends. However, some of us could one day be the focus of an inventory of our own children arriving at the doors of ACA. Isn't that a lovely thought?
I literally, Jackie, I'm trying to keep a record so that when my kids are working on their inventory, I can say, right. Here's the information you need.
Well, I joke sometimes with my kids that, you know, I mean, now I have two in college, but I've joked with them for years. You know, we're saving for your college and we're saving for your therapy.
Right.
And sometimes after I really just blow it and make a mistake as a parent, I'm like, I will make an extra donation into your therapy fund. And if you ever need me to come to therapy with you and own stuff, I promise I will do that.
Well, and I like that sentiment too, because there's a lot to do in the fourth step.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a whole lot that, of course, we could focus on not passing on to the next generation. But the point is, you're not going to catch it all.
Right.
And you're not going to catch it all in time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think throughout all of the steps is this, give yourself some grace because God gives you some grace too.
Yep.
We're looking for progress, not perfection.
Well, and I also think as we get responsible, which step four really is leading us into responsibility, when somebody comes to us and says, hey, you hurt me, we're more likely to say, okay, how did I do that?
Mm-hmm.
Rather than just get defensive and say, you're crazy for thinking that, or no, I didn't, you're wrong, which actually is making the amends as it's happening. And so we don't have to catch everything because the fourth step is helping us understand when people come to us, we can take ownership right then. And rather than getting resentful or defensive, which may be our character defects, we're familiar. We know we're not perfect and we're okay with that.
Responsibility is no longer just a frightening thing.
Yep. Yeah. So here we are at the end of another podcast talking about step four. We want to remind you that your story matters. Remember, there is something meaningful in every chapter. Don't wait to share your story until it is finished.
You can share your story with us on our Facebook page, Healing Paths, Inc., or on our website, www.thanksforsharingpodcast.com. This podcast is solely for the purpose of information and entertainment and does not constitute therapy, nor should it replace competent professional help.
At the end of another episode, we want to remind you that nobody has time for perfection. We are pursuing progress.
Remember the prayer of the perfectionist. Help me remember I can't do it all. Help me to take things one step at a time, and that the only step I need to focus on is the next right step for me.
Help me to remember that life is a journey. Help me to be able to separate all that I'm learning from all that I have to do. Help me to remember that I am not alone, that I can ask for help. Help me to strive for frequent awakenings, not mastery. I am enough. Amen.